I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, how Democrats are using public safety as a tool of control. Plus, for a lawyer, Governor Bob Ferguson can't read real good. And finally, there's absolutely no changes to the current rent control bill in Olympia that could make it better. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, if you're a first responder, member of the military, or a veteran, right now you can get 30% off your first year of Undivided. Just use the promo code USA at patreon.com/Undivided. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here on this Tuesday. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I don't want to brag, but when I'm right, I'm right. And I don't want to brag about this one. I'd rather be wrong about it. And, you know, I've said this in the past over and over that Democrats in Washington state and in progressive states like in Oregon and California and New York, although New York is coming back to sanity, I think, a little bit, they use public safety as a tool of control. And one of the things that I've talked about, and it might have sounded conspiratorial at the time, is just it has to be intentional the way that they've eroded public safety in our states. Because I can't really think of any other motivation, right, if it's not being done intentionally. And so during my red pilling, as I've sort of sought to understand this, a pattern has become really clear, and I've talked about it on the show before, and I'm going to now provide receipts for what we're seeing happen right now on the public safety front that prove this sort of theory, that what the government's doing in these blue states is intentional to try to grow the size of government. And public safety is a really effective means to do that, because when you don't feel safe, I mean, certainly for families, for parents, for individuals, safety is one of the most fundamental things that you want in your life, right? So when that sense of safety and security is stripped from you, someone can get desperate really quickly. And the willingness to give power and control over to the government, to trade anything you can to be able to feel safe again, I think for a lot of people can take over. You know, as I said, I've discussed this on the show in the past. I've also given speeches about it. I want to play for you a clip of a speech I gave in May of last year. And this was after there was an incident we talked about on the show where there was a guy who owned a car lot. And he's sitting at the car lot and a criminal comes in, jumps in a truck and steals it. And this was during the time when we were still debating over police pursuits and police had been stripped of their ability to pursue criminals. And so police sort of gave up the chase of this guy who was in the stolen vehicle. And so the owner of the car lot, not eager to let tens of thousands of dollars drive away and to be victimized like that, he took chase. And you might recall at the time that he's the one who actually ended up being charged with a crime for driving recklessly as he pursued this guy who took off in a vehicle from his lot. And so I gave a speech at the time, this was, I think, in front of the Snohomish County Republican Party, where I talked about this concept of public safety being used as a tool of control by the government after this incident happened at this car lot.
Our government has made it nearly impossible for police to protect you. And if you dare protect yourselves, they'll prosecute you for it. Because they want you to be so desperate to feel safe again, for your family to be safe, that you'll turn to the government for help solving the problem that the government created. They'll tell you more taxes will help, more gun control laws will help, that if you give up this freedom or that freedom, you'll be safe again. What other rationale is there? Why else would Democrats be so set on passing laws they know will embolden criminals and leave the law-abiding to feel helpless and scared?
And that is exactly what we're seeing play out right now. So here is the pattern, if you will. So they take power away from the police, police defunding, laws like limiting police pursuits, laws making it less advantageous for police to be able to use force to protect themselves or citizens because they're worried about going to prison. So they take power away from the police And then they take power away from people to protect themselves. We see that now, and we've seen it in the previous 10 years in earnest, stripping you of your Second Amendment rights to be able to bear arms to defend yourself and your family. So they take power away from the police. They take power away from people. They give power, and they embolden criminals, which we're seeing over and over with what can only be described as pro-criminal policies. Policies that reduce punishments for people who actually use guns to commit a crime. So take power. I want you to understand this very clearly and to be able to articulate it to other people who haven't caught on yet. Take power away from the police. Take power away from you personally. Empower criminals. And what is the result of that? Chaos and fear. What are we seeing right now? Chaos and fear. What does chaos and fear lead to? Desperation, where you are absolutely desperate to feel safe. So desperate, in fact, that you're willing to allow Democrats to grow the size of government. You'll do anything. New taxes? You want new taxes? Will that help keep us safe? Okay, I'll agree to new taxes. I'll give you more of my money. I'll give up liberties and I'll give you more of my money. Just please keep my family safe. That is exactly what they're doing. It's intentional. It's strategic. So I want to go through a few of the things happening right now that prove this point. And there's no other explanation for any of it because it matches up with that playbook exactly. So as you know, there are multiple jurisdictions facing budget crises in Washington state. So at the state level, they're facing like a $10 plus billion budget deficit, totally self-induced. And also in King County, a very similar situation. They have spent and spent and spent on all these pet projects from climate stuff, et cetera. And now what are they doing? Well, now we're in a budget deficit. So what they're going to want to do is raise taxes, right? So what is the one thing they know they can cut that might make you support them in raising taxes and growing the size of government? Public safety. All the other areas that they could absolutely cut money from. But that doesn't scare you in the same way. It doesn't have the same effect. This from King 5 News. King County Sheriff's Office reduces minimum staffing in some precincts. In certain areas, the Sheriff's Office will also stop dispatching deputies to non-injury, non-blocking car crashes and unverified alarms. So it begins. So they are making cuts of all things to the Sheriff's Office because they want to give power and cover to criminals. They want to create chaos and fear. And they want you so desperate that you will willingly go along with their plans to increase taxes and grow the size of government. Again, there's no other explanation. There's a million other things in King County that they could cut money from, ideologically driven projects, grants that aren't producing anything, like so much of the homeless industrial complex. But of course, that's not going to scare you in the same way as cutting a police response when you have an emergency. So this was the warning, right, leading up to this. King County officials, the sheriff, the prosecutor, this is from Cairo News Radio, it's from just a couple weeks ago. King County officials warn budget cuts will compromise community safety. Chaos, fear, desperation. And even the sheriff, we broke this news exclusively as all of this was happening. So they're scaring you, right? Oh, hey, this is going to impact public safety. And the sheriff herself, who's now a political appointee, what did she do? She sent out an email to her staff telling them that she was actively working with state lawmakers in Olympia to do what? To raise your property taxes. Because that's the only way that we're going to be able to ensure that people feel safe, that you feel secure in your home, that you have a deputy who can respond to a 911 call. The only way to do that is not to spend smarter, is not to cut other things, like the tens of millions, hundreds of millions they spend on the climate crisis, but it's to just raise your taxes. And if we can't raise your taxes, then I'm sorry, you're just not going to be safe because we've also stripped you of your ability to defend yourself. And not only that, at any opportunity that there actually is to improve public safety, they not only refuse to do it, they actively get in the way of it. And we see that right now with the ICE deportations that the federal government is trying to effect. This just came out from ICE Seattle. Jose Del Rio Trejo, 57, a citizen of Mexico, unlawfully present in the U.S., arrested by ERO Seattle. King County had held Del Rio on charges of rape of a child and child molestation in 2024. Do you think King County willingly called up ICE and said, hey, come get this guy? No, ICE has to go around all these hoops to scoop up someone from King County who it should have been an easy transfer. This guy got arrested for child rape. He's in the country illegally. ICE, come get him. Instead, it's a sanctuary jurisdiction. So at a time when we're told that budgets are so thin that they have to cut sheriff's deputies, they've got federal agents willing to help improve public safety by coming in and getting some of the worst offenders off our streets. King County Sheriff's Office actively stands in the way. Our jails actively stand in the way of making that easier. Because we're a sanctuary jurisdiction, so we don't have enough money to send a deputy to your door if there's a life or death emergency. But we're still not going to assist federal agents who are willing to do this work for us. Taking child predators off the streets, taking murderers off the streets. All because our woke ideology gets in the way and because they don't want the streets to be safer. They don't want the streets to be safer. Because they use public safety as a tool to grow the size of government. That is the truth. It's as plain as day. Why else would they do anything that they have done in the past 5 years? Defunding the police, taking away your ability and eroding your ability to protect yourself and your family. Turning around, stopping the feds and their efforts to improve public safety in states that aren't willing to do it themselves. Stripping police of the ability to pursue violent criminals. Prosecuting police officers unsuccessfully for murder. Introducing bills that's only goal is to ease punishments for violent criminals. Attempting to lower punishments for drive-by shooters who kill someone. Attempting to lower sentences for gun offenders, for adults who cook meth around kids, for gang members who recruit juvenile gang members to commit crimes on their behalf. Attempting to allow juveniles who kill up to 2 people to petition for early release at the age of 24 and let them back onto the streets where we would have to pay their rent. You take it all. And anyone who has an ounce of independent thought has to understand that it's intentional to grow the size of government. That's not an opinion. It's just the truth because there's no other, there's 2 options. Either they are absolutely evil and they want you and your family to die painful deaths, or they're using public safety as a tool to grow the size of government. Those are the 2 options then. Pick one. Hell, maybe both are true. And then, of course, they cozy up to criminals. I had to play this because it came up after the show yesterday. So, of course, we discussed this Percy Levy guy who has been held up as this wonderful story of redemption. Oh, criminals. He was given clemency by Jay Inslee in 2019. And then, you know, got to shake Inslee's hand. And Democrats ever since then hold him up as the ideal of what you can accomplish if you get early release from prison. They use him to push their soft on crime policies. He routinely is in Olympia testifying. This is from the Linwood Times, testifying on behalf of pro-crime bills, pro-criminal bills. Well, then what happens? He's picked up, back in jail, caught with illegal guns and enough fentanyl to kill 250,000 people. And we were tipped off to this last night. So on the show yesterday, we had played that he was in Olympia this year, testifying on behalf of, this was two months ago, one of these soft on crime bills from Tara Simmons, who's also a felon, a bill that would have made it more difficult to send offenders back to prison if they violate the conditions of their release. And we just said, you can't write it any better than this. Well, apparently you can write it better than that. Because what we hadn't seen is the exact same day that Percy Levy was arrested in a traffic stop as part of this major drug trafficking operation. The exact same day, just hours before that, he was testifying in front of the House Public Safety Committee. Here's a clip.
Yes, my name is Percy Levy, P-E-R-C-Y-L-E-V-Y. I am formerly incarcerated. I now work for the Washington Defender Association as the public outreach specialist. One of my main parts of my job is assisting people coming out of prison. I start working with them from the inside, and then I work with them all the way through release and into the community. I think it's important for this bill to know that the majority of the people I work with have done 15, 20, 25, 30, sometimes 40 years of incarceration. We're out here as nonprofits and for-profits trying to make sure we get these guys at the gate and give them the best opportunity to succeed that they can have. So that's why I personally think this bill is such a good bill, if we can improve upon that.
Well, thank you very much. Very informative comments. And thanks for the work you're doing. And congratulations on your successful transition there. So are there any questions?
You can't write it any better than that. Hours after that testimony, hours after the chair of the Public Safety Committee, Roger Goodman, notoriously pro-criminal, hours after Roger Goodman said, congratulations on all your success and thank you for all the work you're doing in the community, Percy Levy was in handcuffs by a regional drug task force, arrested with enough drugs to kill everyone in Everett and then some, 250,000 people and illegal guns. But again, couldn't write it any better because Roger Goodman thanks him for the work he's doing. And you know what? I think even in hindsight, Roger Goodman means it. He's glad people like Percy Levy are out victimizing communities, peddling hard drugs, peddling deadly drugs. Why is he glad? Why does he like the work Percy Levy is doing? Because it helps them in their efforts to grow the size of government. There's no denying it. The red pilling is complete. All right, Bob Ferguson sent out a tweet a couple minutes ago that I want to talk about because he's supposed to be an attorney. And I see this misinformation everywhere. And I'm not an attorney, but I do have the ability to read. And if you just read the Alien Enemies Act, which is the act that Donald Trump used to put those MS-13 gang members on a plane and send them to El Salvador, you see very clearly that we don't have to be in wartime for Trump to use that act. So Bob Ferguson came out and he posted this on X a few minutes ago. President Trump is attempting to assert wartime powers without a congressional declaration of war. The Alien Enemies Act was last invoked in World War II as the legal authority for the shameful internment of non-citizens of Japanese, German, and Italian descent. Even though a federal judge issued an emergency and temporary halt to President Trump's efforts to seize powers only granted in war, he is not giving up this effort. This is not normal and it's not okay. All right, since Bob Ferguson can't read, allow me to read part of the Alien Enemies Act, the part that Donald Trump used to issue this declaration. So first, the White House put this out. It says, invocation of the Alien Enemies Act regarding the invasion of the United States by Tren de Aragua. This is important. I want to read the justification because, again, it's going to speak to the reason that Bob Ferguson is wrong. In the proclamation, President Trump said, Tren de Aragua is a designated foreign terrorist organization with thousands of members, many of whom unlawfully infiltrated the United States and are conducting irregular warfare and undertaking hostile actions against the United States. TDA operates in conjunction with Cartel de los Soles, the Nicolas Maduro regime-sponsored narco-terrorism enterprise based in Venezuela, and commits brutal crimes, including murders, kidnappings, extortions, and human, drug, and weapons trafficking. TDA has engaged in and continues to engage in mass illegal migration to the United States to further its objectives of harming United States citizens, undermining public safety, and supporting the Maduro regime's goal of destabilizing democratic nations in the Americas, including the United States. So it's very important in that proclamation that he ties this directly to the regime of Nicolas Maduro and therefore Venezuela. So that comes into play when you read the Alien Enemies Act and why Bob Ferguson is just wrong. And I don't know if he just didn't read it. It says, whenever there is a declared war between the United States and any foreign nation or government, or is key here, any invasion or predatory incursion is perpetrated, attempted, or threatened against the territory of the United States by any foreign nation or government. So there are two ways that the Alien Enemy, and it's very clear, it's in the first freaking sentence. There are two ways the Alien Enemies Act can be enforced by the president. if there's a declared war, yes, that part is true, between the United States and any foreign nation or government, or any invasion or predatory incursion is perpetrated, attempted, or threatened against the territory of the United States by any foreign nation. So it doesn't have to be during a wartime. It can be what's deemed by the president a predatory incursion that is attempted or threatened against the United States by a foreign nation or government. And he is saying, and he's correct, that the incursion of Tren de Aragua into the United States, where they commit heinous crimes against Americans, is perpetrated in part and in conjunction with Nicolas Maduro and his regime in Venezuela. So it's very clear, and revisiting Bob Ferguson's tweet, because there's so much more to it that's just ridiculous, besides the fact that he couldn't read the word or. Either it's a wartime or an incursion. And in this case, that is the rationale that President Trump is giving. But again, reading his tweet, President Trump is attempting to assert wartime powers without a congressional declaration of war. Blah, blah, blah. Even though a federal judge issued an emergency and temporary halt to President Trump's efforts to seize powers only granted in war, he is not giving up this effort. This is not normal and it's not okay. He is not giving up this effort. The effort to get dangerous murderers, rapists, torturers, drug slingers, weapon slingers off our streets? Yeah, he's not giving up that effort. And would you want him to? Isn't that just Bob Ferguson telling on himself? And when he says this is not normal and it's not okay, did Bob Ferguson ever once, while hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens were pouring across our southern border, did he ever once say this is not normal and this is not okay? Not once. When those illegal aliens were trafficking deadly drug fentanyl onto our streets, leading to the deaths of thousands of people, did he ever once say this is not normal and this is not okay and speak up about stopping what was happening at the southern border? No, not once. But he wants to use his voice and talk about not normal, not okay, when we're talking about violent, now terrorists, being deported from our country. This is the guy, Bob Ferguson, whose entire political life up to this point, while he was attorney general, was about Second Amendment issues, was about passing bans on certain types of guns, was about limiting your Second Amendment rights. Guns bad, guns bad, guns bad. But now he has a problem with Donald Trump deporting people who were trafficking guns into this country to use them to kill people. He has a problem with Donald Trump stopping the flow of illegal immigrants and drug trafficking and weapons trafficking across our southern border, stopping some of these big bad guns that Bob Ferguson hates from coming into our country. This is the time when he decides to use his voice to speak out about it. Now, look, we could have like a separate debate, and I think we did on the show yesterday, about whether the Trump administration is bound by that district court judge that said, hey, turn the flight around and bring them back. If that was the only argument he was making, that Trump is superseding and going out of the, you know, he's going around courts or whatever it is, then I don't think that we have, I mean, I think that's a legitimate concern. I don't really know the answer to it. And if Trump did or did not or was not bound to turn the plane around and bring it back, I don't know. But that's not the argument that he's making here. First, he has a flawed reading of the act that Trump used, clearly flawed. There's the word or in there and he just completely overlooks it. But it's about priorities, right? It's about priorities. You couldn't say jack shit when thousands of illegal aliens, many of them known gang members and people on the terror watch list, were pouring into our country and bringing drugs and guns and violence onto the streets of Washington State while you were for 12 years the state's chief law enforcer. Couldn't be bothered to say anything about that. Couldn't be bothered to say, this is not normal and it's not okay. But now that Donald Trump, someone he hates vehemently, is getting those people out of our state, is helping us rid that poison from our communities, now he has a backbone. He wants to say, this is not normal and this is not okay. That's who Bob Ferguson is. That's who Bob Ferguson is. If he can make a political point, he would rather have Tren de Aragua and MS-13 gang members controlling every city in this freaking state. If he could make a dunk on Donald Trump, that's who he is. The only time he speaks out about right and wrong is after he's made a political calculation based on what his base thinks about it. Shameful. And it's why I will never buy into this new moderate persona of Bob Ferguson. That is exactly who he is. And it is absolutely shameful. Disgusting. Maybe they don't. Maybe they genuinely don't care if you and your family die miserable deaths. Maybe that really is what it's all about. All right, we're going to talk about rent control coming up next. It's heading over to the Senate. There's going to be opportunities for you to weigh in on it yet again to try to stop rent control, this horrible, awful policy historically from being implemented statewide in Washington. So we'll discuss that first. Hell, maybe you're a homeowner who's renting your home out and you've had enough. Well, reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com. I know Wes has been working with a lot of what were landlords who are now getting out of the game in Washington state because the laws have just gotten that ridiculous. So Wes Jones can help you out. He said right now, so March and then May, these are going to be top months of the home of the year to list your home. And there's a lot of pent up buyer demand right now. So that means that homes that do hit the market are selling quickly, especially homes that are properly prepared for listing and priced correctly. So he can help you with all of that. He can help price the home correctly. There's a lot of strategy involved there. Wes has been doing this for a long time. He knows how the game is played. And then when I say properly prepared for listing, you know the truth. Sometimes we live in our homes and we neglect them. And then we turn around and sell them and we improve our homes for someone else. But it's because you want to get more money for it, right? So he can help you out with some of the cosmetic upgrades that you might need to make just to make your home really stand out to buyers. And you can even pay for those at closing, which I think is a really cool service that Wes and his team offer. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It is simply a better way to sell your home. All right, so rent control passed in the House. You guys know that. And so now it heads over to the Senate. And I've said, the Senate is also controlled by Democrats. So it passed overwhelmingly in the House where there's Democratic control. So I'm like, well, what's going to be different this time around? I'm hopeful, right? But it's going to be debated over in the Senate, in a Senate committee. So I'll be pushing out, I think probably tonight or tomorrow, an action alert on that. So you can let senators now know who have rent control ahead of them, how you feel about it. So the vessel is House Bill 1217. And you know by now the ins and outs of it. The big thing is it would cap rent increases at 7% a year. And as we've said over and over, what is going to happen if you cap rent increases at 7% a year? Well, landlords are going to feel compelled to have to raise rents 7% every single year, even if they wouldn't have otherwise, because they're trying to hedge their bets against increased property taxes, which they're also pushing down, and other increased costs that they're facing so they don't lose money. I don't know why Democrats expect landlords to just suck it up and lose money. Like, for the good, what is that? Who's going to do that? Nobody's going to do that. So a couple things. So the version of the House, the version of rent control that went over from the House, it doesn't mean it has to stay in that form. So the Senate can make changes to it. If they do, it'll be sent back to the House so the House can concur on those changes. And then that's the version that would be pushed to the governor's office. So Senator Jamie Peterson, who is the leading Democrat in the Senate, said something interesting. This is King 5 News, right? You talked to, or it's maybe from a media availability, I think. But this is a clip from King 5 News.
I think we will have the votes to pass rent stabilization this year. But there are a number of dials within that policy that I think we have members interested in adjusting.
So he's suggesting they have the votes if they make some alterations to it. So what would those alterations look like? First of all, he calls it rent stabilization. Don't use the captured language. It's just rent control. But rent stabilization sounds very nice and flowery. But it sounds like maybe he's talking to some Democrats because this failed in the state Senate last year. Rent control failed to advance in the state Senate last year, and they just bring it back, and he's like, okay, we're going to make some changes. Could that be increasing the percentage? So we're capping, let's say, instead of capping rent increases at 7%, we cap them at 10%. It doesn't make a difference. The effect is going to be the same. So we'll see how some of these moderate Democrats in the Senate react to that and whether we can stop this policy in the Senate or whether our only hope of stopping the policy is in the governor's office and Bob Ferguson, who I just told you how I feel about Bob Ferguson, but maybe in this he'll see some reason. So we talked to State Representative April Connors, who I think over on the House side during this debate was one of the most effective voices on this. She also has some experience in her day job in this sector. And so we talked about the messaging on rent control, what's working, what's not working, and her hopes as this bill advances. Representative Connors, welcome to Undivided.
Thanks for having me here today.
Is this the first time we've had you on? No.
I'm not sure. Maybe.
Ah, that would be terrible. I'm sorry if we haven't had you on yet. I love your social media, by the way. You're great on social media. You've got it figured out. It's not too corny like the Democrats. It's good. It's catchy. So rent control, obviously, you guys weren't able to stop it in the House. Do you think it was just sort of a foregone conclusion in the House, or are there messaging things that worked better than others? Any sort of reflection on that?
Well, we had heard all along that this was their number one priority this session. So being able to stop it in the House, I think, would have been really hard. A lot of changes were made to the bill in the House. That's a little bit better for the state of Washington. There's still a lot. Actually, I didn't want the bill to pass at all, but there's still a lot that could be done to even soften the blow on residents, on housing providers, on developers in Washington State. But there were some changes that were made in the House. It's being heard tomorrow, I believe, in the Senate Housing Committee. So important for people to get out there and get their voices heard about rent control this week.
Yeah, what do you think? I mean, the media kind of falls in line on the rent stabilization. And I always remind people, like, call it what it is. It's rent control. That's captured language meant to influence public opinion. But what do you think are some of the key arguments against it that resonate with people the most, that they can most easily understand why this is a bad policy for the state?
First, I think if you look at the history of rent control, call it stabilization, I feel like the Democrats have a great way of taking words and making them different so they sound better in a lot of contexts across the board. But rent control has failed everywhere that it has been tried. And this policy is not going to be any different. And I think it's important to know that I understand. I'm actually a real estate agent by trade. I've been selling houses for over 25 years, and I understand what supply and demand looks like. And if we have increased supply in Washington State, the cost of housing goes down. There was just a recent article in Austin, Texas, where they added 50,000 units to their housing supply, and rents went down by over 20%. And so we have to add supply for them to be able to go down. Increasing rent by 7% every year, you can guarantee that your housing provider, every year you're going to get a 7% increase on your rent. And I think that is the piece that most people aren't realizing. They don't think their housing provider will maybe increase their rent by 7%. But just a hint of this, people are already starting to sell. I can tell you from my own personal experience, I have a team at home that's still managing my real estate business, and some of our housing providers are putting their houses on the market with the hint of this passing in Washington State.
Yeah. So, and presumably out of the rental market, they'll go to like a single family unit or something.
Well, these are single family homes that they're selling. And, you know, one of them was $1,200 a month. It's, you know, great price for a family just starting out to be able to rent. And that will no longer be available on the rental market in the Tri-Cities. And I think we'll see a lot of that. And I don't think people realize the damage when we talk about just personally to their own pocketbooks, but to the pocketbook of the state of Washington, which has been the message that I keep trying to get out there, because I received an email, you know, after sitting, you know, on the Appropriations Committee, and there was hardly any talk of the fiscal impact on the state that this bill is going to have. And I know we're concerned about renters, but we should also be concerned about the state's budget. New development brings in B&O tax, they bring in sales tax, they bring in construction jobs to the state. And the amount of developers, I said it in my speech on the floor, you probably heard, it's a great bill for Idaho, it's a great bill for Montana, it's a great bill for Arizona, because they're all going, already starting, and said they are leaving Washington State to build in these other cities. So the more we decrease supply in Washington State, the higher the rents are going to go, regardless of rent control.
Yeah, it's a good point. So you mentioned, you know, you were able to get some quote unquote improvements, but obviously it's, I mean, you can put lipstick on a pig. It's still rent control. But we just played a clip before you came on from Senator Jamie Peterson, the Senate Majority Leader, who said that he thinks he has enough votes, but they might have to make some changes to the bill, suggesting maybe increasing 7%, putting the limit at 7% to some other number. I mean, does that do anything to negate the consequences of instituting a rent control policy? Let's just say they increase it to 15%. They limit the rent increases to 15%. Does that make it better?
Brandy, I don't think that anyone would think that would make it better, because then you'll have housing providers that, again, say our property taxes went up X amount, which there's a bill in front of us to take the local taxes from 1 to 3% this year. That means they'll increase it to 15% every year, which will hurt the renters even more in the state of Washington. So I don't think increasing that cap is going to be necessarily helpful. Maybe some housing providers won't need to do that, but if you have someone in a long-term lease, you have to increase it every year because you can't adjust the rent until that person moves out of the home. Something that would be probably more helpful for developers is to increase the amount of time that developers are exempt from the rent control bill. Right now, it was 10 years. It got moved to 12 years in the house. It's still not long enough for developers to want to take the amount of risk that they take to build new units in Washington State. So moving that up to 25 or 30 years is probably could be helpful to keep some of the developers in Washington, but right now, that's not happening.
Yeah, and I think you're in agreement with me that the best version of a rent control bill is no rent control bill. But whenever they talk about, and they'll put in amendments that sort of appease the number of senators that they need to vote on it. But I just don't trust them anymore with this because we've seen this so many times where, I mean, the reparations program where they said, oh, it's just loans to buy a home and now they want to make it a gift. So there's many times where they've done something to get it across the finish line. And then less than a year later, they turn around and they just change it. So even if they pass it with a 15% cap, there's nothing saying they won't drop that to 7% next year, correct? Nothing that would stop them from doing that.
Correct. They'll just continue to make changes. There were a lot of changes made in the House. You might have followed along. We had a ton of amendments, and then there was a new striking bill that came out by a representative that took a lot of the amendments that we had up on the bar and put them into the bill. So we had less amendments on final passage. And some of those did make it less hurtful to housing providers, especially ones with like pet deposits, where you couldn't charge an additional month's rent for pet deposit. That went back into the bill where they can charge for that now. So some of those do help housing providers that came out, but it doesn't mean that next year, like you said, that it doesn't change. You talked about the reparations bill. That was a huge fight on the House floor. I actually volunteered to serve on that particular Covenant Homeownership Committee just to be aware of what was happening. Usually one in the House and one in the Senate of each party that serves on those, and I serve on that committee. And I've heard conversations in that committee, just to be honest with you, about, well, now let's make this available to people to remodel who didn't get the ability to actually have a house that they could purchase. And so it is, things are constantly changing here.
Yeah, 100%. Well, Representative April Connors, I appreciate that. And I appreciate your perspective working in real estate because I think some people dismiss that, like, oh, landlords aren't selling. Yes, they are. They are. We hear it all the time. So keep up the good work down there. And we'll be watching this one closely.
Awesome. Thank you for having me today.
So that Republican State Rep April Connors, tomorrow 1:30, that is the first hearing in the Senate Housing Committee on the rent control bill. So we'll put out an action alert. We'll do it tonight. Nicole, remind me to do it tonight. She's like, okay, got it. She knows I forget everything. We'll put out an action alert so you can state your position for the record because we already know the pro rent control people will be out in force. Putting their pro position in. So we need to make sure we counteract that. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at the Rental Housing Association, who are down in Olympia right now doing the Lord's work on behalf of landlords. I know they're busy trying to count votes, trying to speak reason to some of our elected leaders down there about why this would be totally counterproductive and would actually make rents and housing way more expensive. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. Okay, let's have a little fun, shall we? Oh, I love this so much. So, March Madness, not really my thing. Not a big basketball. Are you a big basketball fan?
No, not really.
Okay, yeah.
Not college
Look, I
basketball.
don't know. I don't know who's good. I don't know who's bad, nor do I care. But you know what version of March Madness I do care about? Olympia March Madness. So our friends at Future 42 right now are running Olympia March Madness. They've put out a bracket where you get to decide on the craziest bill, the worst bill introduced in Olympia this legislative session. Now, some of these have already died. Some of them are very much alive, like rent control. So you get to vote. It's just about worst ideas here, not necessarily the worst bill to pass, worst ideas. And I love the regions. Because they've structured like March Madness. There's the more taxes for everybody region. Trust us, this is good for you region. What crime problem region? And the super duper important region, which is just like absolutely worthless, unnecessary bills like the one to regulate cow farts. So Future 42, they put out this hour-long podcast where they were setting the brackets. I actually thought it was a ton of fun. If you want to watch it, it's on all of Future 42's platforms. Here's a clip.
Hi, this is Steve Gordon coming to you live with Olympia Madness. On behalf of Future 42, there's enough going on down in Olympia that's wild and crazy. We wanted to put together a bracket so that you, our fans, can vote on the craziest bills coming out of Olympia this year.
A lot of this stuff happens in darkness usually, though, right? And so one of the things that we're trying to do is highlight just the crazy that goes on in Olympia after you go to bed.
We've had a lot of folks, and a lot of folks in our Future 42 audience that have been helping us by contacting your legislators, weighing in on a lot of bills that you know, you agree would be harmful for our state.
Yeah, and so I think Brian had a good point there, where it's not just, yeah, it's fun, but a lot of these things happen in darkness. I mean, literally like at 2 a.m. And so this is a way, if people weren't aware of how bad some of these bills were, to get them involved in this and to get them to understand just the craziness. So right now we're in the More Taxes for Everybody region. They're going to vote on these. They're having public votes on their X and Instagram accounts on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So it starts with the More Taxes for Everybody region. So Monday's vote, which is already over. Sorry, you missed Monday's vote, but the next one will be tomorrow. It pitted two. I'm curious, Nicole, what you voted for. So which one is worse? The one seed was the vehicle mileage tax, like pay a tax for every mile you drive, versus a four seed, unemployment for striking workers.
I would say unemployment for striking workers.
I agree. And that was a four seed. So I'm going to disagree with that.
I am. Yeah, I'm going to disagree with that because of the vehicle mileage tax, the way that it was presented, it was based on the honor system and nobody was going to honor that. So I
tend
thought,
to agree.
Whatever.
It would have been an upset, but it wasn't up to us alone. Other people voted on it too. And the winner was vehicle mileage tax. Okay. So that is going to advance. And the one that's going to be voted on tomorrow is property tax increases versus the new can deposit tax. So property tax increases is the higher seed. Mm-hmm. I think that one probably sail through pretty easily.
Seeding is never my specialty. When we used to do Awesome Audio.
Seeding on Dory's show.
Dory and I didn't.
I loved Awesome Audio.
Never agreed on the seeding.
Yeah. Oh, I loved Awesome Audio. Clips of the year.
Yep.
Oh, that was such a good segment. That was genius. So maybe we can steal it in honor of Dory.
There you go.
Yeah, but this one's good. So
I don't want to seed them. I'm not good at it. So.
Well, I mean, I think you're good at everything.
Oh, thanks.
I think you do a good job. So if you want to participate in Olympia March Madness with our friends at Future 42, there's a couple ways that you can participate in the voting on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. You can vote in the polls on their X account or over on Instagram at Future42.org is their handle on both of them. You can also go to their website, future42.org, and they'll be tracking all. And they also have these fun little cartoons associated with all of them.
Adorable.
And I thought they're totally adorable and kind of poking fun at the lawmakers who introduce these ridiculous bills. So future42.org to participate in March Olympia Madness. I love it. All right, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. This one, I saw it a couple days ago and it's been developing and it's just made me angrier and angrier and angrier. And I'm like, we got to talk about it on the show today. So on Unbelievable Today takes us to Illinois, where a school, honest to God, forced middle school girls to change in front of biological boys. Let's talk about it in Unbelievable. Okay, so this takes us to Lake County, Illinois and Deerfield Middle School. When I first saw it, I thought that's probably not true. That was my first, because it's so crazy, even in the realm of gender ideology nonsense, it's so crazy. I just thought it has to be illegal. That can't be true. This was the headline that came out from the Lake County Gazette. Deerfield middle school administrators forced teen girls to change in front of a boy in a school locker room. You can see why I thought, no way. How could you force a girl to change in front of a boy? Well, it's because the boy's not really a boy. The boy's a girl. The boy's just born in the wrong body. And we don't want to make the boy girl feel uncomfortable. We can't make anybody who's transgender feel uncomfortable. So instead, we have to make the girls uncomfortable and we have to subject them to changing their clothes as a middle schooler in front of a biological boy. So there was a lit school board meeting on this, as you can imagine. And the mom of one of these girls, Nicole Georges, spoke in front of the board.
The situation went from bad to worse. A few days later, the male student was present in the girls' locker room. Feeling violated, the girls made the choice to not change into their PE clothes with a biological male student present. The next day, Assistant Principal Kathy Vantrese pulled the girls into their office, questioning them. The same day, Assistant Superintendent Joanna Ford, Kathy Vantrese, and multiple teachers all came into the girls' locker room, making them change into uniform. This went on all week with the addition of Ginger Laugerman. My daughter refused to take part in having her privacy being violated. How dare they? She ran out and called for me for help. Principal Wegley was offering my daughter a new PE class. The answer was no. She is not changing for the remainder of the year, and she is not changing into another class. The girls just want their privacy, and they want their locker room back.
Literally disgusting. How is that not criminal? Basically going in there, and these are middle school girls. Think about that. These are middle school girls, and we're putting them in these situations. And you've got multiple teachers and administrators who are going in there and basically saying, this is what's going to happen. It's sad. I'm impressed by middle schoolers who have been taught well enough by their parents to speak up if they're uncomfortable and to call their parents if they're uncomfortable. But it's sad. Why I'm sad about it is that parents even had to talk to their kids about the fact that they might be faced with a situation like this. Like, never would have dreamed of this when I was in middle school. And now you've got teachers, of course, middle-aged woke white women, it's always them. We're like, you're going to do this. You're changing. Everybody's changing. This is a girl, not a boy. It's just insane. And of course, because there's no low they won't defend, the activists showed up at the school board meeting as well.
Thank you, school board. From what I've heard, y'all are following the law, which is fantastic. My name is Charlie Friedman. My pronouns are they, he. Oh. I am a trans person. I am the parent of a trans middle schooler.
Listen. Targeting a middle school student because of your white god. Yeah.
Excuse me. Can we pause for a second? This is a time for us to listen, to hear your viewpoint, and we want to hear that. All right. Okay. So thank you.
Yes. So children that are raised by those who hate, vilify, and fearmonger will hate, vilify, and fearmonger their peers.
Is it possible to literally roll my eyes out of my head? Why do they always look the same? That looks like all the people who were calling me ugly online last week because I refused to call boys girls.
Right.
I was like, oh, you're calling me ugly? Interesting. Interesting. This is disgusting, and this is the natural course of things. I mean, at the very least, right, you have to identify as schools, even if that's like the law of the land there, like it is in Washington State. You have to identify and understand at this point that this is going to cause conflict. And there are parents talking to their students about this who've been told if it makes you uncomfortable, you don't have to do it, etc. At the very least, there needs to be an alternative for those girls who do not want to change in front of a biological boy while all of this is being sorted out, hopefully, by President Donald Trump in stripping federal funding. But the idea that you would have administrators, and whether they forced them, like I'm not saying they cornered them and said, strip down and change into uniforms, right? But they clearly came in with the goal to intimidate these girls and to shame these girls who were uncomfortable changing in front of a boy. And imagine as a middle school in front of your peers, when you've got adults who are basically shaming you for something that you don't want to do, you're going to do it. You're going to do it. I don't know. How old's a middle schooler? 7th and 8th grade. How old's a middle school? 11? 12? 13?
Yeah, up to about 14. Yeah.
You think in that moment they're going to stand up to those teachers and say, I'm not doing it. Like, as well as their parents have taught them, this is a middle school girl, and you're basically suggesting that they're hateful, as those trans activists were, for not wanting to change in front of a boy in their preteens.
The shirt the second one was wearing said, trans with a knife, trans kids with a knife on it.
Tells you everything you need to know, right? Just insane. I mean, at least it's not just us, right? At least it's not just us. It's happening elsewhere in Illinois as well. It has to end. There has to be an end to this insanity. I also, just by the way, I've come to this new sort of conclusion about the worst. I want you to think about this because I've been thinking about this a lot the last 2 days. because I got a lot of threats last week. We were mm-hmm. dealing with a lot of threats that stemmed from my assertion that boys can't be girls. And then my coverage of the constitutional amendment around abortion and gender care. So we were like inundated with threats last week. We didn't talk about it in the moment. Things seem to have subsided a little bit. A lot of those threats were from like white dudes, just dudes.
Mm-hmm.
So think about how vile that is. Think about how vile it is for a man to threaten a woman for wanting to protect girls' spaces. A man who's not the one who has to be in those spaces threatens a woman for trying to stand up for the safety of girls. I just can't stop thinking about that because there were so many men threatening me online last week because I'm trying to stand up for girls and women. It's just insane to me. Like how, and I bet they call themselves a feminist. I bet they're those men who think they're feminists. So you're a feminist and a champion of women because you're threatening women who stand up for biological girls. Like, that's nutty stuff. That's nutty stuff. All right, I've told you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. We'll get to national news coming up next. Got a couple great national stories. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. We all need insurance. Why would you not make sure that you have the best insurance at the best price and have someone else handle it for you? Gosh, I'll tell you, it's so nice. We have to renew our business insurance, and they just send you a handy little email. Hey, this is what we got. Any changes this year? If not, sign, seal, deliver. We'll just move it on. You don't have to go out every year, shop, make sure you have the best rates all over again. They're already doing that for you. And they'll come back and say, either your current provider is great, let's stick with them, or hey, we shopped around again, totally proactively, got you better rates, here you go. I just love it. It's so stress-free, and it can save you a bunch of money. We hear from undivided viewers and listeners about First Mark all the time. Eric says they saved him 30% on his auto policy, 70% on his homeowner's policy, and he just regrets waiting so long to take the First Mark challenge. So don't be like Eric, take it today, firstmarkinsurance.com. I'm sure Eric's a great guy. Do be like Eric. But don't wait like Eric did. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is what? They work for you, not the insurance companies. Okay, I saw this tweet out today from Media Matters. So Media Matters is like a leftist organization that pretends it's like, oh, the media needs to be unbiased and conservatives are the problem. But so consider the messenger here. But so they push this out with this infographic. And the gist of it is that conservatives dominate the new media space between, you know, the Joe Rogans of the world, the Charlie Kirks, the Ben Shapiros, et cetera, Tucker Carlson, Jordan Peterson, Candace Owens. They absolutely dominate social media, the new media space, well above and beyond leftists. So Angela Carusone with Media Matters said, what you see here is the clearest illustration why things are so messed up and why it cannot get any better until this asymmetry is addressed. Put simply, right wing has the narrative dominance. My organization, Media Matters, did this study and has been sounding this alarm for years. So he links to this study. And it's so funny that they call it a research study. It's just basically like conservatives bad and conservative influencers have an outsized voice, which we already knew. I mean, anyone who dabbles in new media knows that there's far more prominent conservative new media figures than liberal new media figures, but let's read into it anyway, shall we? So the headline of their research study, "The Right Dominates the Online Media Ecosystem, Seeping into Sports, Comedy, and Other Supposedly Non-Political Spaces." A New Media Matters analysis found 9 out of the top 10 online shows assessed are right-leaning. And so, according to the guy who wrote that tweet, that's why things are so messed up, is the right owns the new media space and the left has fallen far, far behind. And it looked at, and it breaks some of this down. Look, I don't think this is a particular surprise, right? And I'll get to it in a moment. It's interesting that they ignore the obvious cause of this, but it says total following of right-leaning and left-leaning online shows, and it breaks it down based on YouTube, Rumble, Spotify, Kick, and then Facebook, Insta, TikTok, etc., and then all platforms. And like, The left, so left-leaning online shows, they have about 100 million followers, where right-leaning online shows have nearly 500 million followers. So why, nowhere in this quote-unquote research study, does it say why that is? Does anyone with a brain, which I know is every single one of you, care to point out why conservatives dominate new media spaces? It's because they were completely shut out of legacy media. You could do these exact same graphs, your little circle graph, your little charts and all these things, but focus on legacy media and left-leaning shows and content would completely dominate conservative shows and content. That's what led conservatives to seek other platforms to get their ideas out there, is they were completely shunned from legacy media. And there's been study after study about legacy media having a far, far left skew. So it's funny because they complain about this and hand-wring about this and, oh my gosh, the balance is totally off. The balance has been off for years. And conservatives went about trying to fix it very successfully. And now you're mad. Maybe had you not created such a blatantly biased media ecosystem in the first place, conservatives wouldn't have gone off on their own to create these platforms like Daily Wire or whatever it is that are now eclipsing your legacy media platforms. So they're mad about the bias on this when they've been loving the bias in legacy media for decades and decades and decades. I mean, part of the reason I went off on my own is because some of the things that I felt were going on in our coverage and things I wanted to say would not have been allowed in the legacy media space. The other thing I want to point out, so again, going back to that, pull it back up. So some of the ones they highlight here, it's interesting because they, again, have no self-awareness. Some of the main, what they're categorizing as right-leaning shows that were never intended to be political. Why do you think they turned political? Like Logan Paul, he was like a kid doing prank stuff. You turned him into a conservative with your crazy ideas. Russell Brand, you even turned him into a Christian. Mm-hmm. You turned him into a Christian conservative with your crazy ideas. Jordan Peterson was up in Canada not bothering really anyone until you started to push this radical gender ideology. Now he's one of the most prominent conservative voices out there and has a reach above and beyond anything he ever would have achieved had you guys not went and canceled him on Patreon because of his beliefs over gender ideology. So you did that. Joe Rogan, like the king of all shows, Joe Rogan wasn't a conservative. You drove him with your insanity into the arms of Donald Trump. And now you're mad that he has an audience of 39.9 million people on any given week. Isn't that crazy? The lack of self-awareness. You literally did it to yourselves. You did it to yourselves by making legacy media so insanely biased toward the left. And then you took some amazing voices who'd built big platforms that were focused on anything but politics, and you made them political with your crazy ideas, and you drove up their views and their subscribers and their followers. You did it to yourselves, and you lack self-awareness. So that tells me you're never going to be able to fix it because you can't properly identify the problem. I asked you guys in our daily, it's just crazy. Did we make the list of top 10 shows? Not quite.
They forgot us, but we should have been in that.
I think we just fell probably just behind Candace Owens. I'm sure it was like Joe Rogan, Ben Shapiro, Candace Owens, us, right?
I don't know. In the little bubbles?
One of those might be one of us.
It should be.
It could be. They don't have names on.
I think we're better than some of these. I think we got a bigger audience.
That's possible. It's possible. Well, yeah, it has some of these. Some of the views, like our views eclipse that. So I'm not sure. Yeah, interesting. Rude, honestly. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X to characterize your media consumption. Like, what is driving your information on any given day? Is it mostly legacy media, mostly new media, or is it equal parts new and legacy? Nicole?
Well, for sure, new media, more so, and that's where I get more of my information at this point. But because of our job, I still consume a little bit of legacy as well. Yeah. But I'm looking for content in new media because I don't trust legacy.
Yeah, it's interesting. 1% of people who took our poll say mostly legacy media. So that corresponds. They're dying.
Right.
I mean, their ratings are down. Their profits are down. There's a reason for that. 1% is like nothing.
They don't get it.
And I get it that we have an audience that literally subscribes to a new media platform, ours. Mm-hmm. So I understand it's a little bit skewed, but 1%, that's wild.
Well, I was watching a legacy news show this
morning. Which one?
Fox 13. But they called the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of Mexico. And I was like, right there, you just showed yourself, right?
Yeah.
You could have just not said it. They could have said, because they were talking about where the astronauts are going to land. And they could have just said, they'll land tonight at 3, whatever.
Yeah, or you could say, whatever. They'll land, and that whole issue is like whatever to me, but they'll land in the Gulf of America, as Trump has renamed it, from the Gulf of Mexico. You know?
But to say Gulf of Mexico without any acknowledgement, you've just like stamped it.
I agree. And it obviously goes much deeper than that. I mean, just blatant political bias. Some outlets are better than others, but 64% said mostly new media and 34% said equal parts new and old. And I do think a mix is great. It's like I always tell, I did this post yesterday because some of my family members have gone off their rocker at attacking people who hate Donald Trump. It's like turn off MSNBC and touch some grass. And I also say that turn off Fox News and touch some grass. You know, it's like they're just different sides of the same coin. And if you're only watching one of them, the idea that you're getting a full, complete picture of what's going on, but some people watch it like if you're watching it clear-eyed, like I agree with everything Fox News says. I know what MSNBC is saying. I know that Fox News is biased to the right. I'm watching it. I don't care. That's a different thing than truly believing that you're getting a full, complete, fair, accurate picture of everything that Donald Trump is doing, et cetera. Right. It's like more people need to touch some grass and dabble a little bit. Dabble, you know, check some different sources, and usually the truth is somewhere in the middle. It just takes independent critical thought, and it's just some
Why
people don't
so
have
hard?
That.
Some, I mean, take a your, lot of people don't have
take
that.
Take your brain back. Take your
Especially
brain back.
Especially in the state.
Yeah. Y says, Undivided is really the only news I consume. That's okay, though, because obviously we're right about everything.
Totally
sometimes I see legacy media stuff on Facebook, but not really. I count on my husband to tell me what's going on. Let me see. Vicky H., I watch Q13 for the local stuff, traffic, weather, sports, and who can pass up finding out what's on the school lunch menus? Oh, yeah, that's true. That and I enjoy watching David Rose do a decent job of local criminal justice stories. Yes, he is an exception. Mostly I watch local news because I want to see how many moments run parallel to one of my favorite surprise movies, Morning Glory. Otherwise, I try to consume most via X and where that takes me with the bias, if any, of the source in mind. HTA says mostly new media, but I consume several that provide traditional news as well, like All Sides and 1440. I want to make sure I am not putting my head in the sand. And I think it is important to listen to different perspectives. Again, that's a better way of putting it than I did. Don't put your head in the sand. And also check in on the other side.
Absolutely. But then I also think there was a time when I loved the Today Show. I loved Matt Lauer. I'm not afraid.
Oh,
I don't care.
That's fine.
I was a big Matt Lauer fan.
Yeah.
But the way that news or the way that those shows operated before were intelligent. Mm-hmm. They were informative and they were like lighthearted, but
they
still
weren't dripping with bias. Yeah.
Not dripping with bias. But also I think that they treat the audience like they're stupid now.
Yes.
I think they have all dumbed down their audience. And it's not even consumable because there's nothing there. They don't have good conversations. They're just talking.
Yep.
It's not a good conversation anymore, and it's not informative and educational, and it's not giving you anything that you didn't have when you turned it on that morning. So rightfully so, they've treated us like we're stupid in some parts of the country. But
yeah, and I think that's a local news phenomenon because, you know, network, even if they're biased, I think that they have people who generally understand the political issues. They might have a weird interpretation of them, but they can talk about it. They can carry on a conversation about it. When you say local media news like treats people like they're stupid, I'm going to say it. It's because they actually don't know what they're talking about.
Right.
I would say in my old newsroom, there were a handful of producers and on-air people who actually were incredibly intelligent, very in tune with the news, and weren't there just to be a pretty face. But I'm sorry, there are people who, like, being on TV is the job for them. It's not being, like, a journalist or whatever it is. So, yeah, you know, you're reading off the teleprompter and you don't really comprehend or care to comprehend what you're reading.
Mm-hmm.
So they're treating you like you're stupid because they actually don't understand really what they're talking about. They're just reading it. And so there's no depth there. There's no context there.
And even further back than the face that you're seeing, I think further back than that, the value of what these people on camera bring has been let go of.
Yeah.
So I don't think now it's just who can talk, who can say something, who can read this, who can, and it's not who has, you know, educated themselves, who right. is good at this, who is learning from somebody that came before them,
yeah.
who is, you know, really trying to do this
Who's
right.
generally presentable, wants the job, and will right. take it for the money that we're willing to offer. Right. You know, that's really what it is in radio and TV these days.
But you, and continues to try to better themselves, but
yeah.
I don't know, that's it. That's just a lost art.
Yeah.
It's funny because back in the day, I just read the, or actually listened on Audible to the Barbara Walters book.
Oh,
and back yeah. in the day, I mean, yeah, I know, but back in the day, I think people looked at Barbara Walters. I mean, they may have known politics mm-hmm. just based on, you know, fundraisers you go to or whatever, but she was friends with everyone. She was friends with Donald Trump. She was friends with, yeah. There was no disdain until she joined The View. And then it was like, yeah. well, now you've shown your page. But even when she tried to be like the journalist there, yeah. No, yeah. you can't at this
she
point.
She was a good journalist.
Was.
And that's fine. I mean, that's, I did the same thing on the opposite side. Like, I was a journalist through and through. Now I'm a political commentator. And so some people are like, well, now I don't like you. And that's fine. But it's because of my political opinion. It's never going to be because I'm not researched and know what I'm talking about.
But she valued the art of it. She yeah. valued not giving away her politics and that. And she kind of, I think when she went into The View, it was probably like, I'm going to stay yeah. this person. But then it obviously went off the rails. But yeah. But I just think that along with Barbara Walters losing it, so did the rest of journalists.
I agree. Robert says, much of it through email, local paper, Wall Street Journal, National Review, and regional coverage. Let's do one more. Oh, I had one over on Locals I wanted to read. Matt on Locals, Daily Wire for National, and Ben Shapiro and Matt Walsh podcast, Undivided and Jason Rantz for Local. All are good at differentiating between news and opinion and presenting the Dems and legacy media narratives. Actually, one more. Winton says, Brandy, living in Europe, I either get legacy, CNN, MSNBC, or left-wing, BBC, France 24, Sky News over here. Most of the media, except for CNN, have kind of toned down the anti-Trump reporting. Brandy is the only way I can get fair news and information on what's going on in the States. Oh, that's so nice. Thank you. Well, we appreciate it. We all the way over there across the pond. All right. Can we just really quick talk about this, even though we're running out of time today?
Yeah.
R.I.P. to my youth. R.I.P. to my youth.
You said our youth at some point, and I was like, well, not really mine, but...
Forever 21 is closing.
I know. It's crazy. All of these stores that are closing, we're not going to have some place to go shopping anymore. I think we're going to have Target and Walmart, and
But it's
know.
Your fault.
Okay.
It's why? Your fault. You know why? So this is from NBC News.
Okay.
Forever 21 set to shut down its U.S. operations as it files for bankruptcy. It's the second time the chain has filed for bankruptcy as online competition and foreign rivals look to have permanently buried the once leading fashion outlet. They say it's Temu. Temu and Cider.
I find that hard to believe.
No, you have all these fast fashion, cheap brands can get to your door in a day. And that's what Forever 21 was. It's like you could go in there and get a pair of jeans for $7 and like some cute little outfit. And I'll be honest, I shopped at Forever 21 long after I turned 21. Definitely through college and my early days in Seattle when I had no money. Forever 21 was my jam.
I think it started up right as I was getting out of high school. So yeah. it was like an early 2000s. I mean, it was around in the 90s, but not yeah. on this side of the country. We definitely didn't have it.
You were saying you had Wet Seal, which yes. I remember Wet Seal was the first cool store to open at the Fargo West Acres Mall.
Yeah.
Wet Seal, and then
it was
they opened
deal.
Up a Forever 21.
It was a big deal. It was at Alderwood Mall, and we would drive from Blaine to Alderwood for Wet Seal at
yeah.
the beginning of every
hey,
school year.
Wet Seal was a little more expensive, though, and then Forever Probably. 21 opened, and it's, like, huge, and they have floors of, like, mm-hmm. cheap chick clothes, and, oh, I
See,
loved it.
See, I think it's this, I don't know, I think it's part of, there might be some Temu in there, but really you're talking to a younger generation who's not ordering on Temu. That's an older, like, me generation, I think.
They are ordering on, like, the Ciders of the world and stuff.
Maybe, but I think sure. it's actually this, you know, thrifting that's happening now, and all of these, you know, like, this weird style, and I don't really think they stayed up with it. I think they stayed in the little skanky little outfit thing, and that's not most of America in the yeah. kids region. I mean, they do short shirts for kids, or like for girls, yeah. but that's about, like, I don't know, kids these days are pretty simple in their clothes, and I see how it's hard to Man. Like keep up with that, because you can get that at Walmart, you can get that at Target, and there is no shame in that. Like
yeah.
I remember I mean this is still a family story, but I cried outside of Kmart because my dad was making me go in that store. And and that was like, oh my God, you better not be caught in Kmart. Although I guess if you're caught in there, that person's in there too, right? But I literally cried because my dad made me go into Kmart. That's not a thing anymore.
So you think that kids are less materialistic?
I think that they're materialistic, but in different ways. It's more of a techie thing now. And it's more of a, you know, I got a cool phone and I got all of this other stuff. And it's not as much into clothes anymore. And now, I know kids that wear stuff from Target with zero shame. Like, Target's cool.
Well, Target's always been cool.
I know. I'm just saying, not to the extent it is now. Not for clothes. Yeah. I don't think it was always cool.
I mean,
clothes.
I think kids these days dress ugly, like very frumpy and sort of like a weird, lazy 70s style. But that's what I mean. It's
frumpy
style.
Clothes from like Walmart. Nobody cares.
Like the Billie Eilish style where it's like ugly jeans and then an extra triple large t-shirt. And it's like, okay, that's an interesting choice. But I'm saying that like we wore... I mean, remember we used to layer tank tops with a little lace and you'd have like three different lace tank tops and then you'd put a belt. I'd have like a silver belt that I'd put around it and then like a little short skirt or something. I mean, it was...
Remember when vests were in?
I have some weird pictures. I pray to God nobody ever finds my stash of high school photos because it's embarrassing stuff. But RIP to my youth and Forever 21. I'm going to dig into my closet and see if I can find one remaining Forever 21 item that I bought, you know, probably a decade ago. I haven't been in a Forever 21 in years. I'm going to see if I have one. And if I do, I'll wear it on the show tomorrow.
This is actually a funny story. Unless just a couple like weeks ago, I saw one of my friend's nieces. So she's a 20, I think she's probably like 20 years old right now. And she was wearing a New Kids on the Block shirt and it looked like vintage. And I was like, hey, where'd you get that New Kids on the Block shirt? Like, I was thinking she was going to say like Goodwill or something, right? Forever 21. They're just making all of the vintage shirts and Yeah.
That's cool, though.
Now they're not going to be able to do that.
No, they're having a blowout sale, so you can get a shirt for probably $1 at their blowout sale. I have to go get myself a
New Kids on the Block shirt.
Why not? Man, I'm getting old. All right, we'll get to comments and our closing sanity check coming up first, happening Thursday, March 20th. So in 2 days, Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital are having their first 100 days live webinar. So they do these live webinars a couple times a year, help you understand what's happening with the stock market and your retirement portfolio, etc. This one's special, though, because, of course, there's been some downs in the stock market in the first 100 days of the Trump administration. So should you worry about it? Should you be panicking? Is this normal? Is it expected? Zach is going to go through it. He's going to answer any questions that you have. It's totally free. He's also going to do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. It's like running your portfolio through a Department of Retirement Efficiency. So sign up for the first 100 days live webinar happening this Thursday, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. You can sign up super easy. Go to knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. And when you go to the website, a little thing will pop up and say, do you want to sign up for the webinar? And you can just click on it and say, yes. This Thursday, 3:30 p.m. And tonight, don't miss a new episode of Doge Watch with Zach Abraham. We have a lot of fun doing that show every week. Okay, comments and then to our closing sanity check, Nightwolf. Hello, Nightwolf. Welcome to Washington, where we push the limits of stupid and get away with it. Yes, I like that. We should put that on the Welcome to Washington signs at the border with Idaho.
Our new bumper sticker.
Yes. Matthew Cook, $5 super chat. For those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. Benjamin Franklin. Great quote. Very fitting for today's episode. Leland, communists gonna communism. you can bet. Midnight. Yakima let off a guy on a charge of paying a child for a moral purpose with an unlawful gun possession charge instead. State doesn't care at all about safety. Interesting. So he gave a guy an unlawful possession charge, but let him off on the charge of paying for a minor for immoral purposes. Don't you think you'd switch that around or at least do both? Why do you have to let one off at all? Weird. Sergeant Pickles, $1.99 super chat. Brandy, full red pill. One of us. One of us. Yeah, I know. That's a good thing. I want to be one of you. B. Larson, my sister-in-law recently sold a North Seattle duplex she'd owned since the late 70s because of the rent control and other stupid bills that impact landlords. See, it is happening. It's not in our imagination. Lizzie. Hi, Lizzie. I don't think I've ever read a comment from you. $10 super chat. Gender dysphorics are uncomfortable in their own bodies. Let's make girls more uncomfortable for the sake of indoctrination. Yep. It's like, you can imagine how, even as an adult, I don't like changing in locker rooms around other adults. I just don't like it. I guess I'm not this like strip naked, you know, be bearing it all in the locker room at the gym.
No.
I'm just not like that. Like, I'm very demure, you know, very mindful. Yeah.
When I walk in and there's some older naked lady in there, I'm like, oh, yeah. I'll go away from that area.
Don't look at me.
Well, not even that. I like give her her space. So I don't know why people don't like their space.
No. And we expect kids to be comfortable with it, right. Like changing around a boy. I think not. So strange.
Weird.
Lynn, the liberal talk shows have been failing since the 80s. Yeah. I don't know. Locally, there's not. Is there one good liberal show or podcast locally?
Locally?
In Washington State.
No, they've all failed. That,
I can't think of
there's one. There's been a few that tried to start up. There was, in my career in talk radio, yeah. There was two stations, I think, that tried to do liberal talk radio and both failed, I mean, within a year.
Yeah, even at Cairo Radio, where we both used to work, the most successful shows were always conservative.
Right.
And part of that might be the market share. Like, again, legacy media is all liberal. So for people who are looking for dissent, they're going to choose one of the conservative shows, and there aren't as many.
Well, I would also go back to what we said about dumbing it down. Honestly think that conservative people are looking for that education and that knowledge, yeah. And the liberal people don't necessarily. They just like whine and bitch about things, but it's they don't really look for the content, look for the like, look to gain knowledge and make educated opinions or takes on it.
Well, and I think it comes with that independent mindset. Like, yeah. You have to be a very particular person, type of person, to watch this show. Like, we might spend 40 minutes, some episodes, talking about one story and all the ins and outs of it. You have to be a particular, like, it's why I laugh when, you know, the anti-Trump people try to, like, everything is, oh, you're dumber than me. It's like, I don't know, because, you know, we have a lot of Trump supporters who watch this show, and they are hungry for 40 minutes of conversation about a single story and understanding it. Mm-hmm. You know, so, like, their whole, like, it's very sanctimonious. Like, you're just dumber than me. It's like, no, they're actually pretty smart because they're independent-minded, they're open to new information, and they want to take in a lot of information as
multiple topics, so, like, so, and not just, like, being a trans activist, and that's the only thing you know is how to, you know, be a jerk.
Yeah, but holy smokes! Sorry to interrupt you. Kevin Bates with a $50 super chat.
I just saw that come in. Yep.
Gosh, that's nice. Thank you. It says, great channel. Keep speaking truth to power. Matt, I dropped my daughter off at high school. All the girls are wearing sweatpants and lounge pants, baggy jeans, Birkenstocks, or UGG slippers. All baggy. He spelled cheap UGG clothes. Like UGH, like, ugh, slippers. slippers, which actually kind of works. Yeah, very baggy. Like,
and brand name is not necessarily important.
And I like that. That's anymore. Fine. Mm-hmm. That's fine. It's just like, I remember, you know, I was kind of chubby when I was a kid throughout high school and stuff. I've never been super small, but I'll see these girls who are just little, they've got this little stick thins. And I'm like, oh my gosh, if I looked like you when I was young, I'd be wearing the crop tops and these pants. I guess that's fine. It's just like, wow, times have changed. Times are changing.
Very much.
All right, good comments, everyone. With that, thank you, Nicole. Mm-hmm. Let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, in case you're wondering just how bad things are getting for Democrats, nationally, ladies and gentlemen, even CNN has to admit it.
Terrible, terrible, terrible. To quote the great Charles Barkley, view Democratic Party favorably. CNN SRS, look at this, 29%. NBC News, you want to go lower than that? How about 27%? Both are record lows, the lowest going back to 1992 in CNN polling, the lowest going back on record to 1990 in NBC News polling. The majority of Americans hold an unfavorable or negative view of the Democratic Party at this point. All I can say is I'm a big fan of the oldies, so I'm going to quote Chubby Checker, how low can you go?
Well, keep forcing middle school girls to change in front of biological boys, and you'll find out just how low they can go. That has been our closing sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. A special thank you to Undivided subscribers who pay $5 a month or more to help support our show. We sure do appreciate you. You're the reason why we can be on live 4 days a week with a special show on Sundays. And a reminder, right now we're running a 30% off promo for your first year of Undivided if you are a first responder. Law enforcement all wrapped up in those ICE agents, take advantage of this one. If you're a veteran or a member of the military, just go to patreon.com/undivided and hit or you can go to our website undividedpod.com, hit support the show, and just use the promo code USA. Simple. USA. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon. A new episode of Doge Watch out tonight.